It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. If you're rich, you have a much better chance of getting into college. The Equality of Opportunity Project finds top Ivy League schools admit more students from the top 1% of earners than the bottom 60% combined. But those schools get higher marks in that all-important U.S. News rankings of best colleges. So is that ranking system actually making the inequality gap worse? With me to discuss this is Tim Renick, Vice President for Student Success Programs at Georgia State University. GSU is actually a national model for graduating low-income students, though it slid 30 spots in the U.S. News rankings. Hello there. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And also with us by Skype is Mitchell Stevens, Professor of Sociology at Stanford University. Hi, Mitchell.
Good morning.
So I want to start with you, Mitchell, because I want to take on this theory people have that the rankings are actually encouraging colleges to accept kids who come from wealthier families. Do you buy that theory?
Well, the rankings reward colleges and universities for being more rather than less selective, for admitting fewer students rather than more students. And they reward schools for admitting students who have high grade point averages and standardized test scores. And we know that high standardized test scores especially parallel closely students' social class backgrounds. So to the extent that schools are encouraged to court a certain kind of young man or woman and their families, they do abet a certain kind of competition for wealthy high achievers.
Although you could make the argument that maybe it's the standardized tests that are part of the problem, right? Instead of the rankings?
Yeah, but I guess that would be sort of, pulling apart Siamese twins in a way.
I see.
There's a whole bundle of competitive systems in the United States that are really hard to pull apart. And to the extent that we're expecting public flagship universities to increasingly compete with each other nationwide, rather than specifically serving the residents of their state, we're just encouraging this process.
So, Tim, did Georgia State, did you guys know it was going to hurt your rankings for you to pursue this goal of graduating more low-income students, of graduating more first-time college attendees? Did you know that might hurt you?
We were aware of the implications, yeah. One thing we did as we launched this program is looked at the correlation for our students between SAT scores and their chances of graduating, and we found almost no correlation. What was a much better indicator of student success were a lot of other factors, like what courses they took in high school and what their grades were. Those type of considerations don't tend to fall into the rankings and get weighed very heavily because they're hard to quantify. So SAT score is used a lot, but SAT scores doesn't really predict whether students will succeed at places like Georgia State. So we made a conscious effort. We said we're going to control for the factors that mean the most for our student success, not for SAT scores. And as a result, we've dropped over 20 points in SAT scores. At the same time, we've improved our graduation rates by 22 percentage points.
Yeah, it's incredible how many kids you're actually getting across that graduation stage. Let's hear this comment from Lynn O'Shaughnessy. She's with the University of California, San Diego, and she says the U.S. News rankings are actually bogus. That's basically her point.
It's not a scientific methodology. In fact, the major factor is what all the schools think of each other. So all schools in a particular category, like National University category, they all rank each other on a 1 to 5 scale every year. So, of course, it's absurd. What does somebody at San Diego State know about what's going on at University of Connecticut or University of Missouri, where I went to school? It's a flawed way of evaluating schools.
What do you think of that, Mitchell? Is she correct that it's not scientific?
Most academics and measurement experts agree with that the ranking systems themselves are not the best scientific indicators of quality, but that certainly hasn't prevented them from reorganizing the market for higher education. The bottom line is twofold. One is uncertainty, and the other is money. Families really don't know very much about higher education, and colleges and universities, frankly, don't make it terribly easy for families to understand relative quality. And so the rankings, you know, fill in that gap of knowledge for families. The money part is that our public universities are increasingly seeking wealthy out-of-state families who pay high tuition rates to subsidize their bottom lines. We have nationwide, defunded public higher education, and it's an expensive proposition. So there's a very strong incentive for public universities across the country to court families who can pay high tuition rates.
So, Tim, at Georgia State, it appears to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, of course, that you have sort of redefined what success means for the university. There's the U.S. News rankings. You kind of have tossed that out in terms of defining whether you're succeeding in your mission. Is that accurate?
I think that is accurate. That, you know, what role should a public university in the middle of downtown Atlanta serve for the community? It should be able to support the students who need us, not go out of the state and try to find students with the best SAT scores and the strongest socioeconomic background. But the rankings force institutions to just that move if they want to move up in the rankings. Selectivity. If you reject more students, you rank higher in the rankings. If you spend more dollars per every student, you rank higher in the rankings. Many of the most important rankings don't take any consideration of the cost per the student. What is the net cost of the education? And as a result, you can, as a consumer, be greatly misled by saying, I'm going to a high-ranked institution. It may not be the institution that serves you well.
Mitchell, are we seeing the inequality gap? Because, look, in the broader American society, the income and inequality gap overall is extreme. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing a similar gap in universities?
The gap that you describe is unquestionably growing. A lot of us think back to what we like to call the good old days between 1950 and 1980, when the United States created the most accessible and affordable higher education system in world history. And we did that through massive investments by the federal government and state legislatures. The University of California system, the storied jewels and the crown of public higher education in California, were free to California residents for decades. That public commitment to underwriting the cost of higher education is just not there anymore. And colleges and universities are increasingly being driven by the need to bring in more dollars. And so, just like in any market that requires private payers, the schools are very rationally in their way, seeking families who can pay the highest dollar. Georgia State and the University Innovation Alliance, of which it's a part, I think is an admirable effort to swim in the other direction. But it's a really hard current to swim against.
And part of that, Tim, is because of how universities are rewarded, right? I mean, if you're Harvard, you're rewarded over and over and over in reputation, in the amount of charitable dollars that you get. Is a school like yours, which has a completely different mission, do you feel as though in the broader educational marketplace you get the same sort of rewards?
Well, what's encouraging is that the reward system is shifting. Not the rankings are shifting. They've remained pretty constant. But there are voices out there now that recognize that if you are an institution that's graduating more low-income students, and Georgia State's now graduating more black students than any other college or university in the United States, our low-income students are graduating at the same rate as our middle and upper-income students.
I wonder if people realize how surprising that is.
And how very rare that is as well. There are just a couple schools nationally that can claim that. And so, we've had our own recognitions. Bill Gates was just visiting campus a few weeks ago. He was here for a keynote at the World Congress Center and invited himself to come and learn more about our programs. We've been invited to the White House. President Obama was a big fan of the kind of work we're doing and cited us and so forth. So it's nice to get those sorts of recognitions, but it makes even starker the contrast with an institution that is being recognized by the Gates Foundation and by the President of the United States. At the same time, it's moving down
in the
elite rankings, yes.
Let me play you this comment, Mitchell, from Carolyn Hawksby. She's at Stanford with you.
Yep. Yep.
Studies studies this issue of income diversity, and she says a number of high achievers but low-income students don't apply to big schools.
That doesn't mean that they're rural, but that they're one of the only two or three very high-achieving students in their high school. But the high school counselor doesn't have the time or the expertise to be able to help the student sort out the full range of colleges in the United States and know about all the financial aid opportunities that are out there.
So what is the solution here, Mitchell? And in addition, we'd have heard what Georgia State is doing. Are there things that we're not doing?
So I'm really glad you raised this work by Carolyn. I think that raises an additional contradictory dynamic in the sector, in which many social scientists, like Professor Hauksbee, are explicitly advocating that elite schools like Stanford and Harvard go out and scour the country to find those two or three highest achievers and recruit them to elite schools. There's another argument to be made. You know, why shouldn't those top students be going to places like Georgia State or excellent universities that are close to home? I'd say American academics at the moment, we can't decide whether we should cream the top students and send them all to Harvard, or whether we should do more to support the comprehensive universities like Georgia State that are closer to these young people and their families.
Tim, we only have a minute left, but I'm assuming that you would say send them to Georgia State.
We'd love to have them, and we think they have a great chance of succeeding. But I'll add one comment, that it's not just lack of knowledge, although that's important, that some of these students don't realize that there are Stanfords and Harvards out there that are willing to give them scholarships and pave the way for them to attend. We find with a lot of our low-income students, they're connected to their families in a very real and financial way. They're contributing, for instance, to the rent and the food costs for the household. And so staying close to home means the family prospering as well.
That is Tim Renick, Vice President for Student Success Programs at Georgia State. And you also heard Mitchell Stevens, Professor of Sociology at Stanford University. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Pleasure being here.